Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joining the studio today. Look at this. What a treat. Shaka Hislop. Why are you looking so short, Shaq? And Steve Nicol is with us as well. Lots to get through today as, of course, we see another round of matches in the Champions League. Just a reminder of the four games that are taking place over the next 48 hours. On Wednesday, it's Benfica against Ajax, Atleti against Manchester United. On Tuesday, Villarreal play host Juventus. And it's Chelsea against Lille. And maybe surprisingly, that's where we start today's conversation, because of course the big story from the weekend was Romelu Lukaku only touching the ball 7 times in 90 minutes. It is a Premier League record in that victory against Crystal Palace. Inevitably, it was brought up in today's press conference with Thomas Tuchel.
Much has been made of the fact that Romelu Lukaku only touched the ball 7 times on Saturday at Selhurst Park. One, he bothered, and secondly, how can you get him to touch the ball a bit more often, maybe against Lille tomorrow?
What could I do? I don't know. Now we have to deal with it. I mean, there are data out there, and the data speak a certain language, so he was not involved in our game. It's sometimes like this. With strikers, if they struggle a bit in self-confidence, if they struggle a little bit to find the space and to get involved against a good defensive side, it can be like this, and this is of course not what we want, and of course not what Romelu wants, but it's also not like it's not the time to laugh about him and make jokes about him. He is in the spotlight, of course, and we will protect him because he's our player.
Don't make jokes about him has been picked up by the headlines, the newspapers that have dropped. Don't laugh at him, no laughing matter. Don't laugh at our Luca. For more on this, let's welcome in, shall we, Julien Laurent and Ian Dark. Ian, it's fair to say, because it's true, in all your years of commentating the Premier League, this has never happened before.
No, and I think he only touched the ball once in the whole of the first half of the game. And these are pretty remarkable statistics. It's all a little bit embarrassing. I think Chelsea would have been happy if that stat hadn't found its way into the public gaze. And now Thomas Tuchel has presented all the newspapers with a lovely headline, "Don't laugh at Lukaku." Well, people are kind of laughing, and it's proving to be a bit of a loveless marriage, isn't it, between him and Chelsea, that the whole business of that unfortunate interview a couple of months ago, where he seemed to suggest he wasn't that happy. They managed to patch all that up. Now you get this. I mean, the fact of the matter is, so far, the other players haven't learned to play with Lukaku, but maybe more importantly, he hasn't learned to play with them either. So at the moment, it's not working.
Is Tuchel shifting the blame slightly, Stevie? Obviously saying, you know, I don't know what to do.
I don't think he's shifting the blame. I do agree with Barkey, though. You can't come out with things like that. He's trying to be clever, I think, to deflect it, and ends up making it worse. But the truth is, he said it all. If your manager's bringing up that you might be lacking confidence.
Right.
That means you're definitely lacking in confidence. He's definitely seen it in training. He's obviously seen it in games. And quite honestly, when you go for £100 million, you shouldn't be lacking in confidence in yourself. Yes, sometimes your form can dip, but you shouldn't be lacking in confidence. Are you telling me this big man here is starting to wither already? He hasn't even had a full season at Chelsea. And he's looking as if mentally he can't handle it. And quite frankly, it shouldn't really be a surprise.
It was 2 touches he had in the first half, which including the kickoff. Sorry, Stevie, we've seen this with players before, players hiding on the pitch, yes?
Right.
So how does Tuchel fix it? You could say, well, just let him play through it, but that could be expensive regarding their Champions League run, their run in the Premier League.
Well, it's not just down to Lukaku. If you're supposed to be the spearhead of a team and you're supposed to be the main attacker, then the other 10 are supposed to get you the ball. So it's not just down to him. But the fact that he did touch it so few times tells you that his head's away. You know, because he's gone through that game in a dream. Because, as I said yesterday on the show, if I'm playing centre-forward and I haven't touched the ball, I'm not going to be happy. I'm going to make sure everybody knows about it. So I think mentally he's struggling. And again, I don't think it should be a shock because he couldn't get it at Chelsea the first time round, which is why they let him go. He goes to West Brom, does great. Again, no pressure on him. Goes back to Chelsea. He ends up getting a big move to United. What happened to United? It's the same thing.
He blew it up at Inter, didn't he, last season?
Yeah, but again, you know, who goes from two of the top sides in the Premier League to Inter and then comes back? Nobody does that. There's a reason why two of the best sides in the country didn't want him, because he didn't think he was good enough. And because he does well in Italy, you think, OK, he's maybe learned. Well, he's shown that all the bluster about, I've matured, my game's come on leaps and bounds. I don't see a change. His hold-up play isn't any better than it was 4 or 5 years ago. His finishing's not any smoother. Yes, he got a ton of goals, and he will score goals if you get him the ball. But that comes back to what I said earlier. You have to get him the ball.
If he gets the ball in the right position. So to your question, Dan, I don't necessarily think he's hiding. Listen, he's had 7 touches, including the touch-off. But at times when he got the ball, he was in a crowd. He did play players in. I think there are a couple of things at play here. As I said, partly because of Chelsea and how they play tactically, it doesn't suit Romelu Lukaku. But at the same time, he's got to figure out ways to get on the ball and have impacts in games. Lukaku was at his most impactful at West Brom, at Everton, at Inter, where he had room to run in behind the opponent. At Manchester United, he didn't. At Chelsea, he won't. The only teams who will press high up the park and offer space in behind are Manchester City, Liverpool, and to a lesser extent, Leeds. So as a result, Lukaku has got to adjust his game for what's asked of him by the opponent. Just simply, whenever the ball happens to get to him, even if your touches are good, even if your passes find somebody else, that's nowhere near enough. You've got to make those adjustments during the game.
Jules, what's going on behind the scenes here? Who brought in Lukaku?
Well, we know for sure that he was not the first choice, of course. Erling Haaland was. Chelsea tried to sign Haaland, could not make it work. Lukaku was a very good second choice, but he was still second choice. I think there's a few reasons why we see him really struggling now. The first one, of course, is the lack of confidence, like the boys explained. I think the main one is the fact that the style of play of this Chelsea team is very, very different to the one at Inter Milan, where he was very involved in the build-up play, in the link-up play. He was touching the ball a lot of the things, maybe almost everything, was going through him and through Lautaro Martinez very much centrally. It was at Chelsea, it's all about the wing-backs. It's all about building up to create a 2v1 on the side and then putting the ball in the box. And I think Tuchel sees him as a box player, which I don't think he sees himself as a box player. I think he wants to be far more involved. And that's where the problem is, really. And especially when you take out Chilwell and Reece James through injury, both of them pretty much at the same time, and both of them, as Tuchel explained today also in the press conference, at the best, really. I think that's the main reasons why he's not doing as well as we thought he would before. I think Tuchel and Chelsea thought, okay, he's going to come in and he's going to finish the chances that we create, and we created a lot last season that we could not finish. It's just not as simple as that. And the problem is now, it's either you change everything and build everything around Lukaku, or you stick to what has been successful for you, and Tuchel has been very successful, and you try somehow to make it work for Lukaku in this.
What happens next, Ian?
Well, what happens next is they play Lille, don't they, in the Champions League. It'll be interesting to see the selection off the back of that statistic, whether Lukaku is in the team. I suspect he will be, but they've looked maybe more effective this season when they've played somebody like Havertz in a false number nine. It seems to suit them better. So Tuchel's selection will be interesting. I mean, the easy answer for Lukaku is to deliver goals, isn't it? If he can deliver a couple of goals in this first leg, and Lille haven't been in the greatest form. They just let in five against Paris Saint-Germain a couple of games ago. So you'd think Chelsea are going to go through. You'd think Lukaku would have chances. But in fairness to him, the one thing I would say is we've seen a lot of replays of Chelsea games where are they really delivering the kind of crosses he might feed off at times? I mean, as Julian was saying there, the two wing-backs are injured. There's not too many crosses going in, and he is pretty useful in the air. So he's not getting that kind of service, but he is off form, and he wouldn't be the first striker to go to Chelsea and it not work for him. Think of Shevchenko, Torres, etc.
Some thought, obviously, the signing of Lukaku would see Chelsea in the title race, and they were, of course, at the start of the season, have fallen away now. However, we thought it was going to be Manchester City, home and hose, but the way the results have gone, Manchester City are 6 points clear of Liverpool. However, Liverpool play Leeds on Wednesday. They win that game. It is down to just 3 points. The two teams, of course, due to meet each other in April. That result, the win for Spurs, has just blown everything up, Ian.
Yeah, title race back on, isn't it? I think most of us thought it was over. So you'd think Liverpool, you can never forecast anything in the Premier League, but you'd think Liverpool will get the win they need over Leeds, and then they do have to go away and play at Manchester City. They still can't afford any kind of mistakes. But, I mean, the good news for the neutrals is we've got a title race again. And I thought that was a terrific performance by Spurs. I didn't think they had that discipline to display in them, the one they produced at Manchester City. And Kane, of course, as you've discussed on this programme already, was out of this world.
Jules, I've heard rumours that Manchester City are considering banning you after your post-match interview. Is there any truth to that?
I don't know if they will. It's just Aymeric Laporte, who I spoke to for French TV, got a bit upset when, in fairness with the first question, I said, well, okay, what went wrong? You conceded three goals and you made mistakes on, big mistakes on all three of those goals. And he went like, oh, you know, 95% of the goals scored at this level are because of defensive errors. Okay, mate, but you don't have to make them. It's not because others make them that you have to be among the 95% that make the mistakes. The defending, I mean, Ruben Dias on the first goal tried to play offside. It's the wrong call and the wrong move. The second one, Walker and Dias go for the same ball, and then it's far too easy for Son to pick up Kane and Kane's run. And the third one, Walker doesn't even jump. He doesn't even know that Kane is behind him. So it's very unlike City to defend as badly as that. It's the reason why they lost. It's not the only reason, but it's the main reason why they lost. And clearly Laporte was not happy that I reminded him how bad they were defensively in that game.
Fantastic, Jules. Don't wind him players up after the game. All doom and gloom for City, Shane?
No, you lose one game. I mean, in how long? That's not at all an issue. I still think, again, City can be their own worst enemy. And that, I mean that no disrespect to Liverpool and the form that they're in. But City are in poor position. As I've been saying all along, I just feel the deeper that they go in the Champions League, that being the tournament that they want to win most. Mm. You just wonder if that is going to prove enough of the distraction for Liverpool. Because both these teams are more than capable, that game in April apart, of winning everything between now and the end of the season. So it all comes down to that and who holds the nerve best. Liverpool have already won their Champions League recently. We see how City cope.
How do you chop this up percentage-wise, Ian?
Percentage-wise? Well, I still think Manchester City are in the box seat because they've got the points on the board, and the game against Liverpool is a home game as well in April. Goodness knows where the two teams will be there, because the Champions League becomes an increasing distraction, doesn't it, as that competition wears on. But I still think it's 60-40 in City's favour.
Everyone says 60-40. That's pretty much the resounding majority have said that. For a lot more reaction to what happened in that game between City and Spurs, be sure to check out. Look, he's in the big chair.
He's in the big boy chair.
Robbo
in the small chair.
Gab is away. Robbo comes in. Check it out over on the website.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What a performance from Aubameyang. What a third goal. Golasso to get his hat-trick. Busquets on the new signing saying he's a great player and having him in the squad on a free transfer is a gift. Ian, how much could Arsenal rue letting him go?
Well, he fell out completely, didn't he, with Mikel Arteta. So I think it had become an unworkable relationship. He's gone to Barcelona. He's obviously got a new lease of life. He looked pretty lively the first time they used him as a substitute. And then this hat-trick. So it looks, doesn't it, like the old Aubameyang with his mojo back. And Barcelona are going to be the beneficiaries of that. Of course, it will be a little bit embarrassing for Arsenal that he turns it all on again. But he hadn't turned it on for Arsenal for a good year or so. So you wouldn't say it was the wrong move. But hey, look. Good luck to him. He's back, isn't he?
If we're sat here at the end of the season, Arsenal have missed out on a top four place because of their lack of goals. You're going to have to question this decision, aren't you, Jules?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, we will never know anyway, because he could have stayed and played and they still would have missed on the top four and we might not have scored many goals. It's just that Arteta would not have played him. So it was better, I think, for everybody to all move on. The club, Arteta, Aubameyang said, you know, the problem was with Arteta, no one else, nothing else. And yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe not replacing him was maybe a bigger mistake than letting him go, considering the relationship was completely broken there. But we will, I guess we will never know. What you want to hope is that Arsenal can still have a very good second half of the season, and so can Aubameyang at Barcelona. However, he won't always have the kind of space that he had against Valencia to run in behind, and he won't always deflect Pedri's shot like he did either. But it was certainly, I think, that those goals were a big boost for his confidence and for him psychologically as well.
Stevie, when I said we're going to discuss Aubameyang and his goals that weekend, you're like, oh, it's one game. Calm down, Dan. In that manner.
Is that not correct?
Well, yes, but then it's very much glass is half empty.
No, you have to look at everything. And the truth is, he wasn't going to get playing at Arsenal. And when he was playing, he was not good. So, you know, all this ifs and ands and buts about Arsenal getting in top four or not doesn't matter, because he wouldn't have been playing.
Isn't it a coach's job to get the best out of a player?
Well, if the player wants it, yeah. You can't just turn around and say it's down to the coach. It's down the majority of it's down to the player. But if you've got a player who's not interested, A, in playing for the guy he's with, and B, he's playing poorly and doesn't look as though anything's changing, then you can't blame Arsenal. You can't blame them at all. And again, look at the facts. Jules told you. Teams are not going to defend like that against Barcelona. So, you know, how many occasions is he going to get run in behind? Which suits him. Which is why I always thought he was better coming from a wide area, because there's more space.
Right. But those two goals that he scored, the one obviously from coming in from behind, the second goal was number nine. And the third one is so instinctive.
Oh, yeah. Listen, if Barcelona... He's only just got there, but Barcelona look as though they're beginning to gel as a unit. And if they can create chances, particularly the one centre-forward's goal 3 yards out,
right.
If they can create...
Do you have a problem with this being awarded to him, Stephen? Sorry.
Not at all.
No?
No. Every single person I know would claim it.
Right.
And take it gladly.
You wouldn't mind, Shaq, if you're Pedri?
Oh, he got the last touch. But, I mean, everybody, as players, you know, and players run to Pedri to celebrate for a reason. Because it's Aubameyang's name on the team sheet, shouldn't really matter. It may have mattered a long time ago when you had a goal bonus, but I don't suspect that's an issue in today's game. Listen, and the thing is, I'm in agreement with everybody here. When Aubameyang fell out of favour with Arteta, once they had that rift, at that point, I don't think anybody thought Arsenal would had a chance of finishing top four. But they've been able to put together this run. And yes, if they miss out at the end of the season, people will look back and wonder about Aubameyang. But as I said, in the short term, he wasn't fitting. They weren't playing well. They've turned things around and at least put themselves in the conversation. This has been a win-win-win for both clubs and player. And you take that and move on.
It's a lot of wins.
That's a lot of wins.
Meanwhile, Luis Suarez, of course, getting on the score sheet in Sun Star in Atleti's win against Osasuna. I've got to ask you about the keeper here, Shane.
What about him?
Where was he going?
Where was he starting?
It's a good finish. First of all, let's say that. And as a keeper, you're playing high defensive line. Your first position is quite high up. Quite high up. And you ask a lot of the striker.
How good's the finish, Stevie?
It's a good finish.
Absolutely.
It's a great finish.
World-class finish. Running at... Well, I was going to say running at pace, but running as quick as he can now.
Yeah.
And to get his feet right and get the strike right, he had to bend it as well. He had to put pace on it. I mean, it's a worldy, absolute worldy.
I think he makes it look easier. And every time I see keepers get caught out of position like that, I think back to former West Ham goalkeeper Ludek McCloskey, who became my goalkeeper and coach. But he would always play very high up.
Right.
And he said that players could trip you in training. And they would do it and they'd celebrate, no problem. But in a game, under that kind of pressure,
right,
99% couldn't.
Different gear.
And it takes a special player, in this case Luis Suarez, to produce something like that. So it's not as unheard of as the highlight may suggest.
That, of course, is part of a much-needed win for Atletico Madrid after a miserable run, including losing at home against Levante. Next up for them, it's Manchester United in the Champions League on Wednesday. Ian, this is a really difficult game to call, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a fascinating tie, isn't it? I mean, both teams and both clubs are not what they were. I think a year ago, you'd say Atletico, that's a horrible draw. They were on their way to winning the championship in Spain and brilliantly so, really, under Simeone. But, you know, the mean machine looks a bit broken, doesn't it, this year, particularly defensively. At times, they've just looked a soft touch, nothing like Atletico Madrid. Manchester United, never quite sure what you're going to get, are you, this season? But they have come off a couple of wins now, haven't they? Burnley and then rallying in those four goals that Leeds United. Big win for them, that morale-boosting win against a team, you know, that's a real grudge match against Leeds. So that is a big lift for United going into that one. But you're right, it's too tight to call, I think, that one.
Yeah, United are favourites, Jules. And obviously, when you take a look at the team sheets, you can see why. It all depends, I suppose, on which Atleti turns up and which United turns up.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you look a bit more in detail at United's result, they've only lost one in the last 18. Yeah, they drop points and they take the lead and then they get pegged back. And this is not a good thing. I still think they struggle to control a game for the whole 90 minutes, maybe because of the intensity that Rangnick is asking them to pull, and maybe they can't keep that up. But I think they have to be favoured, even if it's slightly favoured, because I think that intensity could be too much for Atleti over the two legs, because I still think that they've got better players, especially, you know, with the ball. I think Atleti, we've all seen it, have been a mess at times this season. Yes, of course, they can produce some good moments in games because they've got Correa and they've got talented players in Joao Felix and Suarez with that goal. But overall, they've been very disappointing collectively. And I think as United have also been collectively disappointing at times, and they concede goals and etc. But I still think that they're better armed right now to go into a tie like this over two legs, with the second leg as well in at Old Trafford in Manchester, to be able to beat them. So I would say United will win that tie.
A lot more discussions about the Champions League on the latest edition of Extra Time. As always, you can check that out over on our YouTube channel. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. And so we switch gears now to what happened in Italy this weekend. Really quite something in the fact that no one seems to want to win the title. Milan, of course, dropping points. Inter beaten at home against Sassuolo. Juventus couldn't imagine 1-1 draw against Torino on Friday. And Atalanta losing away against Fiorentina. So this all set things up beautifully for Napoli on Monday to go to Cagliari and win. They didn't. They can only manage a 1-1 draw. And what seems most extraordinary about this result, Jules, is the fact that they seem more concerned about the second leg against Barcelona on Thursday in the Europa League and was thinking ahead to that, as opposed to, I don't know, maybe going top of the table and trying to win the domestic league.
Yeah, it's quite incredible. We were texting with our producer Pete before the game and at the start saying, what is going on? What is Paletti doing? Why are you playing, not your reserve team, but certainly a lot of your key players were on the bench, signing with Osimhen, for example, or Fabian Ruiz. You still had, I guess, enough talent on the pitch to go and win at Cagliari, who are fighting against relegation and are not a very good team, let's be honest. But Cagliari played really well until Spalletti threw the cavalry on and Osimhen scored the equaliser with three minutes before the end. And again, it's a bit the same story as with Aubameyang. We will not know until the end of the season if those 2 points drop tonight have a big impact on the title race. If Napoli comes short of winning the Serie A title, short of 1 point or 2 points, we're going to say, oh yeah, remember that game in Cagliari on a Monday night where they should really have put their strongest team and then think about the Barcelona second leg. I can understand why the biggest game is the Barca one, not the Cagliari one in the same week. However, you're in a very strong position, as you said, Dan, to go top of the table, to put pressure on the two Milan teams. In 2 weeks' time, you're going to face Milan at home. So it would have been good to be ahead of them in the table, which, you know, might still be possible, but not as likely now that they dropped 2 points tonight. So hard to understand why Spalletti made that call. But again, we will only know at the end of the season if that's costly or not.
You know, it feels like a world away, doesn't it, when Juve were bored of winning the Scudetto. It was all about the Champions League, of course. It's been a poor run of late after making it to the final against Real Madrid. Since then, knocked out in the quarters against Madrid and Ajax. And of course, the last two seasons, they've been out of the round of 16 against Lyon and Porto, teams that you wouldn't particularly think would be able to compete with Juventus. And next up for them this year is Villarreal, in a great run of form at the moment. In La Liga, Juve go into this tie as favourites, but Villarreal, Ian, are just starting to get things going, aren't they?
Yeah, they've got 10 points out of the last 12. Danjuma, who they bought from Bournemouth, was playing in the Championship in England last year. He's been among the goals. He got a hat-trick against Granada. OK, a couple of them were penalties. But, you know, ask Arsenal and Manchester United about Villarreal. They're coached by Unai Emery, and they're a tough nut to crack. So this is a dangerous tie for Juventus. And just listen to the list of people who are missing for Juventus. Dybala is out. He's injured. Rabiot is out. We think Chiellini and Bonucci will be out. Chiesa was already missing from the team. So there are one or two others as well. I think there's a doubt about Pellegrini, the left back. So they're going to have to make do and mend it a little bit. I think they take the draw from that first leg and then try to get the job done in Turin.
Again, Jules, another really tricky one to call.
It is, and you mentioned Lyon and Porto. This looks very, very similar to those ties that Juve went in as favourite and ended up being beaten and well beaten. I mean, the Lyon game, even if it was on away goals, was certainly the draw in the second leg in Turin was a bad one. Porto, remember, was even worse with the Sergio Oliveira free kick, Ronaldo not jump, all of that story. And they were bad when we expected them to race to the occasion. And this could could very well happen against Villarreal. Donnarumma, as Daki mentioned, back from injury, was really good. They lost Gerard Moreno through injury, but they're still a very good team, well drilled with Unai Emery. They played really well in the Champions League group stages. Remember, against Manchester United, they were really unlucky not to win Old Trafford, for example. So this is a really, really good team. Pau Torres at the back, they're solid, they're strong, they've got good players in midfield like Dani Parejo, who will dictate the game, the pace of the game. So this is it's got tricky written all over this tie for Juventus, and considering how they played on Friday night against Torino in the derby, you would not be confident thinking that they can easily go through.
We'll of course be looking back at that game on the next edition of ESPN FC. Be sure to join us.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Quite the game at the weekend. Nantes obviously beating PSG by 3-1. 3 goals coming in the first half for the hosts. It's interesting when you took a look at the foul and the yellow card rate. 16 fouls for Nantes, just the 2 bookings. For PSG, 10 fouls and 6 yellow cards. And PSG were not happy with some of the refereeing decisions. Let's take you through, first off, in the 37th minute. They felt that this foul on Kylian Mbappe, which we'll just see coming up here, deserved a yellow card. Nothing was given. In fact, Verratti was booked for protesting this. No foul was given for that whatsoever. Is that all right, Stephen?
First time I saw that, I thought he got the ball, to be honest.
Ah, well, there you are. Verratti booked. Then on the stroke of half-time, there was only supposed to be 1 minute of added time. The referee added 3, and it was in that third minute that Nantes would go and get that third goal, because the penalty here for the handball that was given. All of these incidents just snowballed and made the PSG players, and indeed those upstairs as well, more angry. And then the penalty will be awarded here. Appears already on a yellow card. Doesn't get booked for this incident.
He should have. But you never cry the way they're crying when you lose a game. You don't. It's just, you're not going to win.
Well, OK, let's hear Leonardo crying first then, shall we? Appeared to not receive a second yellow, even though the penalty was awarded. Then you have so many fouls on our players, but he says, no, it's Mbappe, it's Neymar. I won't blow the whistle. It's Messi. I won't blow the whistle. It's Paris Saint-Germain. I won't blow the whistle. With the referee, we had the impression today that it was like, bang, 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 I'm shooting you. Verratti came out, not happy either. Saying, how is it possible that we get 10 yellow cards and we can't even talk to the referee? He's the only referee in the world who does things like this. I think the referees need to take on their responsibilities, because in this case, we were by the referee. It doesn't matter, does it, really, in the whole scheme of things, we're on their title race. But, Jules, Stevie, very apathetic. It's PSG, so what? You got some bad calls against you. You know, grow up, stop crying about it. Is that kind of how most of France looks at this?
Yes, only outside of Paris. Yeah, that's true. I mean, we can also point out that there's many games where they had things given by the referee in their favour. The penalty against Lyon, for example, to win the game was never a penalty. So I guess at the end of the season, those kind of things leveled up anyway. What's true, though, is that on this game, it looked pretty obvious that some calls were not going towards PSG's way. What's true as well is, if you look at the fouls and the yellow cards, they're the teams in Ligue 1 that get the most, the yellow card the quickest. Every 4 fouls, they get yellow, when the average is, I think, 7.5 fouls or something like this. So maybe the referee give a yellow to PSG players. A lot of them are for dissent, by the way, not even the fouls. More quicker than other teams. I'm not really sure. I agree with Stevie in the sense that you're a much bigger team. You've got the superstars. You got beaten by a really good good non-team in a game that could have gone more your way. It was a fantastic game. You missed a penalty that was taken so poorly by Neymar, and maybe you should focus on something else than just the referee.
Just taking a look then at the table. PSG remain top. They're going to win the league, no problem, despite the referees being 100% against them all of the time. Jules, you haven't been on for a while. I wanted to talk to you about these PSG ultra signs that we saw last week. Not happy with the club being run. Since then, of course, we saw them go and beat Real Madrid. Has that kind of appeased things?
It has a little bit, I would say. We saw an amazing atmosphere at the Parc des Princes on Tuesday night last week for the Real Madrid game. The feeling is that at times this club, and to be fair, I think it's the right opinion, is more all about marketing and all about the image and all about the selling the shirts, etc., than about the values of the club. And I think that's why the ultras were protesting against. You know, you should not play at home with your fourth or third kit quite regularly. I think again that's one of the problems. There've been other things as well that really frustrated the ultras, and the ultras are very important. Not just in French football, but for PSG, not just because they put the atmosphere right at the Parc des Princes and they make it a tough place to visit, for example, for other reasons as well, and they have quite a lot of influence there. So I think it would be right for PSG to listen maybe a bit more to their fans, not just the ultras, but also of fans at the Parc des Princes, because it's true that in the last few years, you've seen that the direction that the club has been taking was far more a marketing one, really, than a sporting one or anything else.
Meanwhile, I was shocked last week, slightly disappointed as well, Jules, to be honest. PSG against Real Madrid, the biggest game in the round of 16 of the Champions League, and you're off. You're on holiday. Can't even be bothered to watch it.
No, I did watch it, and I wrote about it for the website. I even could not watch the end. I was too stressed out, and one of my kids said,
"Steven's got time to read your article."
I was the lucky charm, to be fair. But it was half term. You know, the kids were on holidays. I had to go with the family, really.
Oh, my goodness. What did you make of it, Jules?
I thought it was a brilliant performance, helped a lot by the wrong call that Carlo Ancelotti made for Real Madrid, of course. Deep while playing so negative, when this is a PSG team that had been defending a bit better since the turn of the year, but still quite vulnerable on defensive transitions, for example, and when you put them under pressure. And yet, I think Real Madrid invited the pressure from PSG. It's true that the tactical plan from Pochettino was brilliant, the way Messi, Mark Casemiro almost, the work that Danilo did on the right-hand side to compensate for when PSG had the ball and Messi and Mbappe and Di Maria were going forwards. I thought that worked really well, the way he helped Hakimi with Vinicius, for example. The fact that Benzema was not fully fit was also a big help. So I think it's great. It was great from PSG in the performance overall, but you also have to highlight the fact that Real Madrid got it completely wrong. And I think it would be a far tougher test in the second leg in Madrid, where I would be going, by the way, Dan, just to reassure you.
Oh, nice. That's all right. You're going to Madrid, won't you? That's lovely. Just a reminder, no Casemiro, no Mendy either for that tie. PSG, 3-1 on favourites, Ian. Go on, give us more percentages.
As that, 3-1 on. Real Madrid, 9-4. Some people might be a little bit tempted by that at the Bernabeu. Maybe Benzema's going to be a little bit sharper. They're going to be on the front foot more in that game. But I don't know, there was something weird about the atmosphere at the Bernabeu at the weekend when they played Alaves. I don't know how many people caught that game, but they seem to be sort of a little bit out of love with the supporters at the moment, so that isn't going to help them. So yeah, I think Paris Saint-Germain, they will get a goal. I think they will exploit that Real Madrid defence, and so you'd have to fancy that they will get through.
Yeah, they, of course, got booed off at half-time, didn't they? It was 0-0 at that stage. Real Madrid going on to win by 3-0. It's all about Kylian Mbappe at the moment in the Spanish capital. Jules looking to sign him on a free in the summer. However, reports coming out while you were skiing, do whatever you're doing on holiday, suggesting that PSG have upped their offer and given him this massive contract if he signs.
Yes, that's right. They're trying everything, really. We mentioned it many times on the show, of course, to try to keep him just one more year, build a better team for next season with some new signings, giving him, obviously, the biggest contract they can, making him the highest paid player in at the club, in Ligue 1, of course, one of the most highest paid in Europe as well. Bringing a new manager, I think we're pretty clear now that Mauricio Pochettino won't be there next season. If Zinedine Zidane was to be the next PSG manager, someone that Kylian Mbappe grew up idolising it, really, maybe that could make a difference as well. I still think it's more likely than not that he will join Real Madrid on a free and be the supermarket signing and the poster boy and all of that than him staying just one more year more at PSG. But they will keep trying as long as, again, the Mbappe family keeps the dialogue open with the club, they will have some hope. As long as they can put on performances like the one we saw last week, and I guess knocking out Real Madrid in 2 weeks' time would be a huge help for that, for them to say, hey, look, you know, we've beaten them. We are a better team than them. Why don't you stay another year and then you can go to them if you want to? That would keep the hope alive as well. But I want to believe when we are briefed that he hasn't made his mind up yet, he hasn't decided yet if he was to stay or go to Real Madrid yet, but I still think that it's more likely that he goes there than not.
Does money really matter, Jules, when we're talking about this extreme amount?
I don't think so, and I think he will earn a lot of money at Real Madrid. I don't think the money is never about the money. It's certainly not for Kylian Mbappe, who's already earned a lot of millions and will keep earning millions wherever he does and wherever he goes for the next 10 years or 20 years in his career, 15 years, and then even after that too. I don't think it's about the money, but remember what we said in the summer. He wants to be the superstar. He wants to be at the heart of the project, whatever project that is. He wants to be the poster boy again. And I think what's changed slightly in the last few months is that we thought at the start of the season, okay, Messi is going to be the superstar, and then Neymar, and then Kylian. The thing is, he has been the key player for PSG this season. He's the main guy, more than Neymar, who's been injured, more than Messi, who hasn't really worked out completely so far. And that's what he wants, and that's what he likes. And I think if PSG is saying, look, stay one more year and you will be again the main guy, the superstar at the heart of everything, more than any other Messi, Neymar, Pogba, Kessié, whoever else is going to come, then he might like that. But he would also be that at Real Madrid. So I don't think that's an argument for him to stay.
Just a reminder, every single La Liga game is live on ESPN Plus this season. It all kicks off again on Friday. Levante trying desperately to get something going, avoid relegation, taking on Elche on Saturday. Rayo Vallecano take on Real Madrid in the Mini Madrid Derby. That's 12 p.m. Eastern. And on Sunday, Barcelona against Athletic Club. Two teams with great results this weekend. In fact, both scored four goals. Coverage starts of that game at 2:30 Eastern.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Meanwhile, full slate of matches in the Bundesliga this weekend coming up. It all starts with Hoffenheim taking on Stuttgart. And then on Saturday, Eintracht Frankfurt take on Bayern Munich. And then a good doubleheader for you on Sunday, Bochum against Leipzig. And it's Augsburg against Borussia Dortmund. Good news coming out from Borussia Dortmund. Gio Reyna, of course, who left the pitch in tears during that thrashing of Gladbach. We thought that maybe it would be a recurrence of an old injury. In fact, medical staff are telling us that it's just 2 weeks with a thigh strain. So some much needed good news there for the US international. A lot more on that going forward, and indeed what's been happening in the She Believes Cup. Be sure to check out the latest edition of Football Americas, which is available now on ESPN Plus. That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Jules and Ian hanging around. So are Shaka and Stevie to answer your questions on Extra Time.
Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. The curtains are here, so Ian Dark must be there. People love them,
I'm
Ian.
I'm going to have to get new ones, aren't I, sir?
No, they're magnificent. They're very good. Although your glass is looking a bit dirty, Ian. I think they need a bit of a clean. Jules is with us as well, back from his skiing holiday during the most important week for PSG. Stevie with us, Shaka as well.
What was the puppet show again?
The puppet show? The Muppet show?
No, the puppet show.
The puppet show?
Yeah.
You're going to have to talk a little. Break it.
If you look at Ian's cottons, it's the exact same as...
The Muppets?
No, the puppet.
Yeah, yes.
What do you call the one there when he's knocked... He gets the alligator and smashes it in.
What, old Punch and Judy?
Aye, Punch and Judy, there you go.
Wow, that's Steve, really good. Good, that's relevant, I'm sure, to a lot of the audience who are watching.
It's almost as old as that suit.
Right. Stevie, three of Barca's four goals yesterday came off Serginho Dest throw-ins. Does Stevie have any thoughts on his influence from throw-ins? Maybe Dest has been learning from a certain coach.
If he's learned anything from anybody, then good for him.
Beautiful. I haven't talked about a throw-in coach for a while.
There's a lot of rubbish.
Have you changed your mind?
No.
No? You say what a lot of rubbish under your breath.
Yeah, have you met Stevie?
I will double down on what I said before.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure if the throw-in coach is going to do anything, it's going to help somebody throw the ball farther.
Okay.
But as far as coming up with designing plays and all, that's nonsense.
Why?
If you're the coach and you've got three other assistants, you're telling me you can't come up with anything, then you shouldn't be in the job.
So Jurgen Klopp shouldn't be in the job. That's what you're saying. Sack Jurgen Klopp. He's a failure.
If Jurgen Klopp can't come up with a set play for a throw-in, then...
But he's the one who's hired the throwing coach, isn't he?
Well, obviously Jurgen Klopp can. And obviously... Obviously Jurgen can. But why are you bringing... Don't tell me you're bringing a throwing coach to do set plays for movement and runs and all the other stuff. Away you go. What an absolute waste of money. Yes, teach somebody to throw the ball farther, maybe.
Right.
Don't give me this nonsense. You need to get a throw-in coach.
Oh.
Come on, what a lot of rubbish.
Ian, where do you stand on throw-in coaches? Do you get as angry?
I think Stevie would have won another Footballer of the Year award had he had a throw-in coach to help him.
Oh, yeah, see, Stevie?
No, I could never throw it.
No?
No.
Yeah.
Maybe we need somebody to help you throw it further. That's where we're going wrong, Steve.
Do you agree with me now?
Well, I don't know what's going on.
Steve's in a bad mood.
It's your fault. You started him with throwing coach.
Throwing coach is next. What time do you have to pick up your grandson tonight?
Shush.
Who will win the second leg of PSG versus Real Madrid, Julian Ron? And why will it be Real Madrid?
Whoa.
I mean, they won't win it. They might draw it. They might not lose again. They should have lost by more than one goal, by the way, at the Parc des Princes. But this is for us, this one. Kylian at the Bernabeu. Imagine the celebration.
Yeah. Which partnership would you rather have, Ian? Son and Kane, Lewandowski and Müller, or Benzema and Vinicius Jr.?
Ooh, crikey. Well, judged on the weekend, you'd probably go for Son and Kane, wouldn't you? Those two seem to have some kind of a telepathy going on. Earlier in the season, Benzema, Vinicius Jr. Yeah, goals are plenty. Not quite so many lately. What was the other one?
Lewandowski and Müller.
Lewandowski and Müller. Yeah. I'm going to go... A very current choice is Son and Kane. Because they just equaled, didn't they, at the weekend? As a pair, they produced more goals, or they've equaled Lampard and Drogba for most goals as a partnership in the Premier League.
Stevie, do you want to tell your telepathy story? Did you tell me about this?
What?
Kenny Dalglish and Kevin Keegan? Good, I'm glad I brought that up.
I think Toshack and Keegan.
Was it Toshack and Keegan?
Yeah.
Do you want to tell it?
Well, do you want to tell the story or not?
No, man.
No?
Sorry.
I thought it was... Who told me the story of them holding a number up? So, basically, you held a number up and say it was number 6.
and then he would like try and telepathically tell the other player who it was, and he could see it in the cameras.
Oh, no, I've no idea.
I kind of brought that up.
We'll cut that out, yeah?
Live, you say? Oh, no.
Lewandowski and Müller, no?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All day long.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Stevie, with Tsimikas in such great form, how would you handle the situation at left back? You can't start Andy Robertson when he is healthy, but Tsimikas has yet to have a bad game for Liverpool.
Seriously? Is there anybody here thinks Tsimikas should play before Robertson?
Jules, you were saying you think he does?
Seriously? No.
No.
Never in a million years.
No. Well, Blaine Harris, there you go. For Jules, Diaby is having a monster season with Leverkusen. How long until he is in the France 11? Will we see a Diaby, Benzema, Mbappe ever?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen him already being called up by Deschamps. He's had a few caps. He's scored, I think, one goal in the four or five caps that he's had. So he got the reward of the really good thing that he's showing on the pitch. The one that really is baffling that he hasn't been called up yet is Christopher Nkunku at Leipzig, who scored two more goals at the weekend in the demolition of Berlin and should have been called up by now by Deschamps. I know there's a lot of competition in his position, whatever his best position is. But Diaby, this is done, and I expect him to be in or around the squad between now and the World Cup, and maybe even make it to the World Cup. For Nkunku, surely now, probably in March, he will get his chance, and then it will be down to him to take.
Ian, how highly do you rate Rafinha from Leeds?
Very highly. It's weird that he left him out against Manchester United. Seems to be a bit of a fallout between him and Bielsa just at the moment. But I can't see how you leave out your best player. I think he could play for clubs in the top four, elite clubs in Europe. He's that good.
Stephen, nice questions for you, Shaka. Do you have a favourite manager to play for, Stevie, either with Scotland or Liverpool? Well, Scotland's out. Liverpool?
Well, Kenny, obviously.
Kenny?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wasn't there a thing that him and Keegan had a telepathy?
Oh, with the numbers.
Yeah, the numbers. They can see the numbers.
Who's your favourite manager, Shaq?
Harry Redknapp.
Yeah?
That was easy.
Yeah? Are all the stories true? Didn't know anybody's names, just...
Well, Harry. No, Harry knew people's names.
Right.
Harry would just kid on like that. Harry was everything that... every cliche about him is true. Yeah.
Ian, which manager did you most enjoy interviewing, working with over the years?
I had a lot of run-ins with Alex Ferguson when he was manager of Manchester United. So it was interesting in an offbeat way. One time he'd say, come and have a cup of coffee and what do you need to know, son? And another time he'd be chewing you out for no apparent reason. So that was always interesting. People like Sam Allardyce and Steve Bruce and Roy Hodgson would always pick up the phone. I used to like Jerry Francis when he was around and managing QPR. He'd talk to you for hours and tell you things he probably shouldn't have told you.
So what was it like being on the receiving end of a hairdryer from Sir Alex Ferguson?
Well, I think people got worse hairdryer treatments than I got, but... At one time he came in, we were all wearing a TV company's jacket, and he said, I want all you people in those stupid jackets to get out of my sight. I won't be talking to you. None of my players will be talking to you. And it was quite funny, because right behind him was Steve Bruce, who was playing for United at the moment. He goes, I don't mind talking to him, boss.
He banned Mark Ogden for a while, didn't he?
Looking back on it, it was fun.
It was fun, yeah. Some abuse. Jules, which manager have you upset? You upset Laporte, we know, at the weekend, from a player perspective.
Yeah, I upset Giroud as well, which is, I guess, the French equivalent to Sir Alex Ferguson, you know, the legendary Auxerre manager. He was not happy with an article I wrote about Djibril Cissé when Cissé was still at the club. And he called me at the office at Le Parisien at the time and shouted a lot in the phone, a lot of swear words and everything. In the end, we made up, and I made up with Cissé as well. But yeah, that was funny. You know when you don't expect the phone call and you just pick up the phone and say, yeah, hello? And it's Giroud saying like, yeah, you're this, you're that, F this and F that. He's just like, whoa, okay.
Since the panellists have had 24 hours to think, let them tell us who they think is the Premier League's best young player, 24 and below. I know you've been thinking of nothing else, Shaq.
Yeah, exactly. I had a full 12 minutes to think about this.
Right.
Still come up blank.
Right. Ian, best young player of the season.
I need time to think.
Samikas.
Let's go for the leadership player ahead of Robertson.
Let's go for Emil Smith.
It's a good chance.
Smith Rowe.
How old is he?
I don't know.
Smith Rowe. Jules.
Yeah, I think Bukayo Saka. I mean, it depends how young. What do we count young? Under 21, under 22, under 20. I think Bukayo Saka has a really strong chance to win this question.
Yeah, Stevie.
Yeah, Saka or Conor Gallagher.
Ah, there we go. Perfect. After Stevie had a meltdown over the Peter Beardsley question yesterday, Stevie got really angry yesterday, Ian, because we were asked, how would you rank Peter Beardsley, Matt Letizia and Glenn Hoddle? And Shaka said that he would have Glenn Hoddle.
Glenn Hoddle.
And Stevie just lost it, basically. He went very red and said, how can you not have Peter Beardsley at number one? How would you rank those three?
Well, I mean, what qualities are you looking for? I mean, they're different, slightly different types of players, aren't they? Peter Beardsley was great, wasn't he, working with Andy Cole and with Gary Lineker for Newcastle. He's brilliant at Liverpool with John Barnes as well. I love Glenn Hoddle. I mean, I work with Glenn Hoddle on commentary a lot of the time. He was an artist, should have won way more than 53 caps for England. So, I mean, I do like midfield creators, so I'd probably go for Glenn Hoddle. But look, hey, if Stevie says Beardsley, I'm not arguing.
I'm staying out of Stevie's way.
Everybody's titled to their opinion.
he was so angry yesterday.
He
started arguing about Letizia.
Who's more easily triggered? Because he's talking about the fact that obviously you got triggered yesterday. Craig has constant Lukaku meltdowns. Who is easily triggered and why? Is it Stevie, Shaka?
Oh, no.
Nah, Craig's more easily triggered.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
But Craig also likes being triggered.
Yes.
I'm more convinced that Craig likes that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stevie doesn't like
that. He's walking a tightrope all the time.
Right, of triggeredness.
I mean, if somehow we could get inside his head.
Wow.
And know what was going on.
Yeah.
Because from nowhere, for apparently no reason whatsoever, he can just, like, switch.
Right.
It's definitely him. I mean, I have enough trouble inside my head, but I'd hate to be in
it. Stevie. Oh, what a sight. Both of those. Oh. Reality show inside Stevie and Craig.
Oh, dear.
Stevie would just be beer, shepherd's pie. That'd be it. We are done. Thank you very much, ESPN FC. Back on your screens tomorrow. Champions League action. Chelsea taking on Lille. Juventus against Villarreal. Be sure to join us.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.